the tabletop takeaway.
Game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop takeaway.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
I'm Charlie McCarron.
And I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And today we're starting a new series on programming games.
Beep, boop, boop.
And to start us off with this series, we're actually going to be talking about Food Chain Magnate, which is another splatter game. We've previously done a
game... The Great Zimbabwe.
Yes. Thank you, Trevor. The Great Zimbabwe from Splatter. Which I mentioned just because they have a very distinctive design style. But basically in Food Chain Magnate, you are running a food chain in what I think is the 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of 50s America, small town.
Americana, if you will.
Yes. So in Food Chain Magnate, you've got your restaurant and you hire employees. You're the CEO. So you start off with no employees at all. And then every round, you can hire more employees to add to your corporate structure. And then you send out the employees to do things. For example, you can send out advertisers to advertise to the people in the town, which is the game takes place on a grid, which represents town, their houses. Mm-hmm. People live in those houses. Your restaurant exists somewhere in the town. So you can send out your advertisers to advertise to people, making them crave any of the five different foods in the game, foods and drinks, burgers, pizzas, beer, cola, lemonade. You can hire employees who will make the food that the customers crave. You can hire managers so that you can send out more employees. There are all sorts of choices. And the reason that we're including this game in programming is because each round, a big part is deciding what employees you want to send out, which everyone does simultaneously. And some of the employees offer you some choices, but some of them lock you into certain actions. For example, if you send out pricing managers to reduce the prices of your food, then you are locked into reducing your prices, even if after seeing what your opponents have chosen to do, you decide you don't want to do that. So the objective of the game is basically just earn a ton of money. The bank has a limited supply of money. Well, okay, it's not really limited. If the bank runs out and people still need money, you can get more money. But when when enough money has been taken out of the bank, then the game ends. And that's sort of a very high-level view of the game. But yeah, basically build a restaurant, advertise to customers, compete with your opponents, and make lots of money.
And win, ideally.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was one that I feel like I'll have to play again to
absolutely
fully get,
yeah.
Because I think it was kind of cool when I realized, oh, Ananda's playing a very different game than me. we were playing it through the internet, so I didn't see that, or I didn't realize that, oh, you're assigning 19 workers per round, and
yes.
I was assigning 3.
Yeah.
So I like that this structure of how you hire people. Like, you can decide to be a giant chain or giant restaurant, mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. but or you can try to go minimal. And obviously, you crushed me, but... but not by as much as I would have thought for that different.
No, he crushed
spread.
Me by that amount, unfortunately.
yeah, I was going for the, I guess, minimalist, don't pay workers, try to not pay as many workers and
yeah.
still
hey, yeah.
kind of do stuff. I don't know.
And I think you managed to avoid paying anyone a salary.
Yeah, the entire time.
For the benefit of listeners, some employees don't require a salary. Whereas other employees, generally the ones that you train up from the lower level employees, yeah. do require a salary of $5 mm-hmm. every round. However, Food Chain Magnate yeah. has a really cool concept called milestones.
Yeah.
So in most games, when you have special powers, you get them at the beginning of the game, and mm-hmm. then that sort of, you know, dictates your choices throughout the game. in Food Chain Magnate, everyone starts out equal. I guess much like the Great Zimbabwe.
I was going to say, yeah, very similar to the Great Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then when you achieve a certain feat in the game before anyone else does, you are rewarded with a milestone. So, for example, the first person to train an employee to a higher position, for example, training an errand boy into a cart driver or training a junior vice president into a senior vice president, the first person to do that receives a milestone, which gives them a $15 discount on salaries, which effectively means that they can have three high-level employees who they don't have to pay, which is what Charlie did.
Mm-hmm. And I like those milestones a lot because it, for a game like this that has a lot going on, it gave us like, oh, I just have to be the first to make a pizza, and then I'll get that thing.
Or the first person to destroy a pizza, and then you get a freezer.
Yeah.
Oh,
which is what I ran for.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's... Well, I think one especially interesting thing about the milestone system is in the early game, things are pretty simple, right?
Yeah.
Like, in general, there are not that many paths that to follow at the beginning. I mean, technically, you can do whatever you want, but there are in Food Chain Magnate, there are certain strategies, or I should say, certain courses of play that if you take them, you will just lose.
Oh, sure.
Like at the beginning of the game, generally, you want to get either a recruiting girl, a trainer, or an advertising trainee.
Yeah.
If you get anything other than those three employees, you will probably lose the game because you will not be able to catch up.
Mm. That's harsh.
Yeah, I did not get a marketing person fast enough, so I could not actually get the houses to want the things I was selling. And so I got kind of locked in this weird loop. But it's also really interesting seeing how the mechanics all work together and how it all kind of comes together to create this whole experience.
Yeah. Well, and because the early part of the game is very simple, the milestones give people something to really think about at that point of the game, because there's this huge array of milestones and you have to think about, okay, which ones do I want to get? How am I going to get them before anyone else does?
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be clear, it's if two people achieve a milestone on the same round, they both get that milestone. But often, if you really want a milestone, you can arrange things so that you get it earlier than anyone else, or at the very least, you know, no later than anyone else.
Right.
And then in the late game, all the milestones have been taken, but people are already focused on a much more complicated game because they have so many more employees. So the milestones do sort of balance the complexity over the course of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because as milestones are taken, that side of the complexity goes down, but you know, people have more employees.
Then you're also trying to figure out what marketing strategy you're trying to use for different kind of products and trying to figure out, you know, how to make it so your opponent can't maybe sell to their houses.
Right.
Like, there's a lot more going on, which
I
knew there was a lot going on in this game before we played. And then playing it, wow, there's a lot going on in this game, which actually, like, didn't deter me at all. It made me want to play it more and, like, figure out these different intricate systems and how they interacted together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, maybe this is my takeaway, the way advertising worked I thought was pretty cool. And I probably screwed it up at the beginning in a way, but I like that you can put out, you know, a billboard that advertises the food that you want to sell. You can put that anywhere. And I ended up putting it closer to your guys' houses or in your area, thinking like, ooh, I'll snipe some people from your houses. I did get some because I was making pizzas.
Yeah.
But more than you guys. But it reminded me of Terraforming Mars, like how you can decide which victory goals are active.
Sure. Yeah.
But you might not win it still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it felt like that throughout the whole game, which is pretty cool. I don't think I've seen a game use it to that extent where it's like I'm setting up what the win conditions are going to be, kind of
making money.
Yeah
You have to make pizzas now if you want to make money.
Yeah,
that's what people want.
Just to I guess to elaborate on the how the advertising works, there are four different types of advertisements: billboards, which you mentioned, mailboxes, planes, and radios, and they all advertise in a different sort of pattern. So like the billboard is next to someone's house, the plane goes over a row or column and advertises to all the houses in that row or column. But yeah, the important thing is you, as you mentioned, you can advertise whatever you want, but that doesn't mean that they will go to you necessarily, because customers decide where to go on based on two criteria. One is how far away the restaurant is from their house, and the second one is how much the food costs. So if somebody else can satisfy their needs better than your restaurant, then they will go to them. Well,
and what I love is that they actually funnel both of those things down into one concept of demand, right? So like, is the demand of your restaurant enough for them to go there, or does someone else have a higher demand for their restaurant, either based on prices, waitresses, like whatever it ends
location,
up being,
location,
like there's all these different things, but like they kind of like very easily put it into like one figure, and it's distance and dollars.
Which is
fascinating.
Yeah. And playing on the app was good in a way, because we didn't have to think about it, but
we didn't have the bookkeeping aspect.
I was thinking like, how would you do this in person? Well, it seemed like it would be a lot of calculations as the board game version, but...
I don't know. I don't think it's that difficult, because you count based on the tiles, which are pretty big.
Okay. So
and
first
all
is
goods cost the same as well.
Until people start lowering prices.
Yeah.
But then they're all the same price for that person.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Or,
so across the board, everything's $10 until...
Until I charged $20 for lemonade, which happened at the end. Because I knew I was the only one selling it to these people.
Yeah. Yeah, you had a your little micro island
luxury
there.
Luxury goods.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about this from game design perspective and programming. I think it's maybe... a characteristic of programming games that have a hidden phase and then a reveal phase, and then like it's carried out. And I think that's what creates the fun tension in this one.
Yeah.
Like figuring out, okay, I'm going to try to, you're kind of like making a bet on what is the best move. Cause it, I feel like it would be a lot more boring if we just took the turns and I did the thing, Trevor did the thing, and Anda did the thing. And we could see exactly what was going to happen. I mean, we still do take turns in the game, but it's after you've committed to your plan, kind of.
Well, yes. And one big thing about Food Chain Magnet is turn order is very important, which I think is characteristic of a lot of splatter games.
Yeah, just like Great Zimbabwe.
Like the Great Zimbabwe. So one part of the game is trying to figure out, okay, do I want to go early in turn order or late? Because if you go early... that's the final tiebreaker for where people go after waitresses, you know, for which restaurant they go to. But it also means that you can nab some higher level employees before other people can, because there's a limited supply of those. You can place advertisements before, which Trevor did at one point. I was trying to place a garden next to a house. So because houses with gardens, the people pay twice as much, but don't consider... Like, not in a way that increases the cost of going to the restaurant. They just pay twice as much.
I think they tip that much more, basically.
They give
they're
like
a fancier
100% tip. So I was trying to gentrify the neighborhood in a way that was beneficial to me. But Trevor went before me and put down an advertisement. And advertisements take up physical space on the board the same way that gardens do. And I was not able to put down my garden. And you kept putting that ad up again and again.
And then I found another place I could put it so that it still interrupted it. And then I also got that house to come to my pizzeria once. So I was like, yes!
Yeah. So,
do you think people enjoy having a billboard in their front lawn and actually want to go to that restaurant?
I am craving pizza, actually.
The thematic funny thing to me, too, is like, I think there's five houses on the board at the start. In this neighborhood?
In our game, there was.
It's a
random setup, so you can have all sorts of configurations.
That's fun.
But thematically, you know, there's five houses, and we're using billboards,
a Zeppelin that you carry around drinks.
But
the game has a lot of very funny things when you think about it.
Well, and all positions, once you get above the trainee level, pay the same.
Yes.
So every executive, vice, you know, president all has the same wage as everyone else.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, that's a nice.
And I actually do like that about the game too, that secondary takeaway, that every worker you pick, you can just take them. You don't have to spend money for them right away.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you recruit them.
Yeah, you just recruit them. You might not use them. So you don't have to pay them then too?
Well, you always have to pay them.
You always have to pay them.
Yeah, that's right.
Even if they're at the beach. Which is where they go if they're not actually working that day.
Yeah.
Right.
and some of the positions are dead-end jobs in that you cannot train them up. Like, you can't train waitresses, for example. Trainers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't train trainers.
Yep.
They're the people who train, but they cannot be trained.
Which is...
And the people that you train mostly have pretty linear career paths. But mm-hmm. then in management, managers can become all sorts of things.
Yeah.
They've just got a wide open range of opportunities.
And I think I want to take a moment to talk about my takeaway, because that's basically it, just the mechanic itself. Of if you break it down to its core, you're talking about having kind of this programmed action selection phase, where you can actually improve different actions by spending an action to do so.
Yeah.
And like that concept to me is just so interesting, especially when some of those actions can become more complicated actions or allow you to have more actions. And like you get to have a lot more choice there, but everything else can be very simple and it's just a linear progression.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Well, and not only that, but you aren't allowed to train people while they're working on the job.
Right, yes,
Which means not only are you spending an action to train one of your employees to make them better, but you also can't use that employee that turn, which is often very, very painful.
Especially for managers.
Yeah.
When you want to have those extra actions and you can't get those.
Yeah.
At least to start.
It's, the way training works really does force you to delay gratification.
Yeah.
Just because... Yeah, the expansion introduces a milestone.
Oh, what's that called?
Okay, so the expansion for Food Chain Magnate is called the Ketchup Mechanism.
Which is perfect. I love it.
ketchup in this case being spelled as, you know, ketchup the condiment, but obviously...
The tomato sauce?
But obviously as game designers, it's a reference to ketchup mechanics. That stop people getting too far behind, maybe because too many people complained that Food Chain Magnate is an extremely harsh game where someone can win by more points than everyone else combined.
To be clear, I had, I think, $60 at the end of the game and Ananda had $500 and something.
Was it only 500?
Maybe that was the turn before you won. Maybe that was it.
No, yeah, it might.
That could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Charlie had like 200.
I had 200 something.
Yeah.
The ketchup mechanism introduces a lot of really cool new things. One of which is lemonade, the lemonade milestone, which is the first person to, I believe it's the first person to sell lemonade, can now train people while they're working. Was that the lemonade milestone? I'm pretty sure there's a lemonade milestone. But the ketchup milestone, from which the expansion derives its name, it doesn't actually work that well as a ketchup mechanic, I think. it basically rewards you if someone else sells to your supply by reducing the distance from your restaurant. It's
I see.
The expansion is still pretty brutal, but I think that's part of the appeal of the game. You know, it's...
Well, it's about that kind of compounding interest, right? Or about that, you know, investment and seeing those returns get higher and higher each round.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, and if you have that in a game, if you don't have enough in that initial investment, you don't have enough, you know, spent, then suddenly everyone's getting really high and you're stuck in the bottom.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, I recognized my mistake, like, halfway through the game. So I just started playing with different things and trying to see how the game can work. I found a good strategy to take care of Ananda the turn he won. I was like, darn it!
I do think that is telling of like games that don't have catch-up mechanics and they're just runaway victor, but they still can be satisfying to play because, I don't know, you still feel ownership over like, well, I know I'm not going to win this, but what could I do as my own like little
side
food
quest.
Chain?
Yeah.
Empire here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that maybe that's where the programming comes in too. It's like you still don't know exactly what's going to happen on the last round.
Yeah.
So
well, and
try something,
I realized I stopped getting executive trainees. And I'm like, no, I need more of those. I need management. I need like more of these people. And I just stopped after I had two or three, not realizing I needed to have them at the beach so I could train them and mm-hmm. still have access to all of them. And I was like, oh, and I just realized that towards the very end. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, man, that would have been great to know ahead of time. And so I started just upgrading that as much as I could. Like, yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah. There's, I think there are a lot of lessons to take away from Food Chain Magnate.
But what's your takeaway?
So, let's see. I guess, well, what one of the things, one of my takeaways from Food Chain Magnate that I've already started using in my games is that when it comes to teaching rules, obviously Food Chain Magnate, very complicated game, but it does show off a really cool way to make sure that people eventually learn your rules and don't make mistakes, which is that you can teach someone a rule by showing them an exception. So let me give you an example. So in Food Chain Magnate, one of the milestones is the first to pay $20 in salaries milestone. And the ability it gives you is a very strong ability. It lets you use multiple trainers on the same person. So normally each trainer can, or each person can only be trained by one trainer. So if you want...
Per turn.
Right, per turn. So if you have two trainers, you can't have them both work together to train one person up by two levels because, I don't know, I guess the trainers are egotistical or something. But if you have this milestone, you can. But the thing is, on the trainer card, it doesn't say anything about, you know, you can only train or you can't have two trainers train one person, which means people might miss out on that.
Oh, sure.
But once someone earns that milestone, then they say,
then the
oh.
the person who is cheating will be like, oh, oops.
Yeah. Right. So the fact that you can take something and define it as a special power helps to remind people of the rule that that power is an exception to.
Sure. Sure, I see what you're saying.
Smart. Yeah. Another example early on in the game would be the $15 discount on salaries.
Right.
If people are forgetting to pay salaries and then someone trains someone and says, hey, I have a $15 discount on salaries. What are those?
When do we pay those?
Yeah. Yes. So by having special abilities that contradict certain core rules that people are likely to forget, you can make sure those people remember them. They might make a few mistakes, but at some point in their first game, they will run into the exception and they will learn the rule. And I've used this in my game Junkernauts that I'm working on as part of the tutorial game. So I've looked at some of the rules. In Junkernauts, you build robots. They move around on a square grid and fight each other. And there are some rules that people forget sometimes. And so I've made bots to remind people of those. So like, for example, robots can only move orthogonally, not diagonally. So I have a bot called the Wormmonger, which is able, its ability is just, this can move diagonally. Hence, resolving that question for the players. So, yeah, so my takeaway is you can use exceptions to teach rules.
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea, especially when you kind of show it as this special feature that you can unlock. It's like, hey, if you do this, you get this. Like, oh, I thought that was already, oh.
Right.
Okay, yeah, got it. I can't do that normally.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. But still allow people to get it, which they realize that must have been really good because I wanted to do that naturally.
Yeah.
So now I want to get that milestone, or now I want to do that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you have a lot of rules, then why not use those as content for your game? Hey,
because whoa.
Yeah.
Content creation.
Hey. That's right. It also creates lots of special abilities, lots of content.
Sweet. Yeah, was there any other...
I really want to play this again.
I don't know. I think there's a lot that could be said about Food Chain Magnate, but we have to stop at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you got any other gems, but...
I guess... Okay, last thing I'll say is... you already sort of touched on this with advertising, but one thing Food Chain Magnate does, and that other splatter games, I think this is just a trend with splatter games in general. They always have this thing where one player takes an action to create a resource that everybody then fights over.
Oh.
Like in food chain magnets, it's the advertising, right?
Yeah.
You advertise and now everyone fights over those customers.
Right,
but you
right.
chose to create them. In the Great Zimbabwe, it's your...
The resources, right?
Yeah, the craftsmen.
Yeah, the craftsmen.
You create a craftsman, now everyone wants to go there to build their monuments.
Right.
In bus, players deliberately create new passengers on the board. They do this in all their games, and I think it's quite effective.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool to have the things people are fighting over be things that the players introduced to the game,
yeah.
rather than things that were just sort of already there to be fought over.
Which mm-hmm. it does start you off with these just houses that are on the board that you are fighting over to start with, but like it can change and you can create new houses.
Yeah, you can build new houses.
Which is just like, oh wow, you can create this little town to be what you want it to be for the game, which is like, you know, it's a whole other social commentary. But, like, it's really interesting, like, how they give you so much control over it.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing I noticed with both Great Zimbabwe and this one, you at the beginning of the game, you decide what the goalpost is going to be for the win condition.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's true.
Great Zimbabwe was you pick your god power, and that's how many points you have to earn personally.
Yeah.
And then this one, it was... hard to wrap my head around, but I got it eventually, and I really liked it, is how the bank's amount of money that it has is based on the combination of all three of the cards we pick at the beginning. So,
yeah.
And that sets the tone for how many slots you have to work with for
right.
your workers.
Too. Yeah.
So if you want it to, if you want to do a big empire, then you probably start with like...
Everyone does three.
Yeah, everyone has...
Is it $300?
Yeah, $300.
$300 in five slots or four slots?
$300 in four slots.
Four slots, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that would be like, you want it to be a long game.
Yeah.
You want to build up. Yeah. It's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see it taking a little bit longer in person. But yeah, playing it online really like felt good. It felt like a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And listeners, if you want to play... Food Chain Magnet Online, you can do so at Online Board Gamers.
Yeah, with Ananda, because I bet he wants other people to play with.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, let's close it out. And next we'll talk about Roll for the Galaxy.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.